morning, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording of another episode. Today, we are recording episode number 67, so I appreciate everybody for joining us in on the conversation, listening in on our podcast, or joining us on YouTube. Today, I have the honor and the privilege to be joined by my good friend and an ex-colleague of mine, Laura Fernandez from Switzerland. Laura, welcome to the channel.
Thanks for having me.
And I appreciate you being with me today. Laura, how is it going? I haven't talked to you for ages. How is it going with you?
Oh, life is nice. Yeah, it's been a while. I was actually trying to think when we last spoke. I guess when I left CLS Communication, when just Lionbridge had taken over in 2015, I think. But obviously, we met before, so a lot of things happened.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine. Yeah. You know, I do recall our time together, working together in at CLS, and our visits, our regular visits, I guess, semi-regular visits to head office in Switzerland. And it was a great time. But every good thing must have come to an end and start a new chapter in life. And so you did as well. And for the audience, Laura is the chief sales officer for a company called Supertext. And Supertext is, for those of you who have watched the episode number 65 with Rinaldo and Christy Sakai from a company called We Are Very. And those are sister companies. Those are connected. So Rinaldo is the founder of both companies, and Laura works for the division that is based in Switzerland. Laura, tell us a little bit. What's it like to in your job now? I know chief sales officer tend to be a little bit of a handful of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Let's tell the audience, what do you do? And before we get into, I always say on this channel, everybody's got a story. What is your localization story? How did you get into the business? Like, what brought you into it?
That's quite a story. Well, it starts, I would say, growing up in a multilingual environment, already my parents being Spanish, and I was born in Switzerland and raised here. So I was always exposed in a positive way to several languages, also in Switzerland anyway. So I started translation in Zurich and in Madrid between 2003 and 2008. And then, well, my career in localization started at CLS Communication 2008. I just came straight from university. I had no idea what to do with the market. I actually had no idea, you know, what potential roles you would have in that industry. You think you become a translator to translate. To be honest, I never translated in my career so far. My first job was as a project manager at CLS Communication back then in Basel, which used to be the headquarter. CLS Communication that later on became Lionbridge. So that's where it started. I was in a quite small team, the life sciences team, which made sense being based in Basel. And little by little, so I got to know the operational side, the linguistic side, obviously the client side as a project manager. And then quite early, you know, I realized, okay, I rather enjoy the client side. I like selling. Oh, selling is probably just an innate thing in a way. So I had the chance to become a key account manager. I think that's where we first met, when we had our global sales conferences. And I spent almost 5 years in sales at Lionbridge. And then in 2015, it was somehow the right moment after 7 years to say, okay, let's make it a change to a much smaller company, an LSP, which is Supertext. I mean, to put it in relation, we talk about even CLS, about I don't know, with Lexitech, we were about 500 employees or more, mm-hmm. changing to Supertext. Back in the days, mm-hmm. we were about 40 employees in 2015. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where I continued then again in sales. So the idea was, to win bigger companies. So Supertext had rather then was just growing into a bigger LSP. And they said, so Laura, you're used to talking to bigger corporates, and we'd like to have you to do the same thing on our side. And that's what happened. Yeah, so that's my story. I never thought that I'd stay for so long in that industry, but somehow once you're there, it's captivating as well because it changed so much. So it's not, I think if it was 30 years ago, probably the job didn't change that drastically. Seen so many sides, also technology. I can't say that it's boring. I keep thinking, wow, and it keeps changing. And to my role now as a chief sales officer, so for 2 years, I was the CEO of Supertext Switzerland and Germany. And now it's a little bit back to the roots. So more focus on sales. What I do is, well, on one hand, I have the key account management teams in Switzerland and Germany, but obviously the sales teams are really doing sales, new acquisition. And I'd say it's a very interesting phase right now because, well, we also experienced some changes the last month, merging with an AI translation company called Text Shuttle. So if you ask me, what do you do? Well, we sell on one hand the classic language services, mm-hmm. but now obviously we're also selling our product, the AI translation solutions. And that's also what it makes actually interesting because it's, I have to train people. We have to see how the market, how our customers react, how the interest is. So it's quite exciting, I have to say.
Well, this is phenomenal. And I wanted to mention something about, about you personally. When I first met you, I did not know, thanks for reminding me you went to college and you studied translation. I truly agree with you. You don't have the characteristics of a translator. You reminded me of me going to university and studying computer programming and then working for 3 years as a programmer and almost wanted to jump out of the window because I couldn't even tolerate being behind a terminal all that long, just doing coding.
I can't see you there, to be honest.
That was great. I do appreciate, you touch on so many subjects that I probably have a lot of questions about. Mm-hmm. First is, we've known each other for years, and I feel like, there is in Europe a different selling style than there is one in North America. And, having worked mm-hmm. with the teams in Europe, I can distinctly see that. I feel like mm-hmm. Europe has a softer approach to selling versus being blunt about it, the North American hard nose approach to selling.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's definitely also something that we saw when we got the teams together from it was like we could never do that to our clients. They would walk away. So yeah, it's a cultural thing. And I would even dare to say that there are huge differences on how we sell in Switzerland and on how we sell in Germany, even though, we have a common language, German, and you would think, well, it's not a problem. It is. It's hard for a Swiss salesperson to sell in Germany because I'd say they're tougher, way more, direct, straight. This is like the German way. Whereas in Switzerland, I understand my role more as I'm consulting. I'm providing the best solution. Obviously, I want to sell it. That's clear. you want to close the deal. It's not a different objective, but probably the life cycles in sales are different. You start talking, getting to know each other. You don't talk about the selling process there. At some point, you will have a meeting. If you're lucky, they have interest. You continue. The circle becomes bigger. So it's also about, you know, building trust. And once it's there, you can go to the next steps. It's a quite balanced thing because you have to find a way. I always tell my people, well, look, you have to do it your way. So it has to be your style. I cannot tell you how to sell. I do it my way. I ask a lot of questions because I think you need to, you know, gather all this information. But there is not one way to sell. It's definitely more, it's softer. Once you reach a certain level, it's very, we have collaborations where it's say, you know, you have the client and the provider, but you're really at the same level. You talk in a very open, transparent way. I will try to do some upselling, but the client should still have the impression that, or in the best case, obviously, well, she's offering the best solution for us. She's actually doing a great job. So probably seen from outside, also what I hear from Christy or also from Rinaldo when I talk to them is like, yeah, you would laugh. I mean, if we approached our clients like we do in Switzerland, they would look at us and think, what do you want? But it's a cultural thing. And then imagine, we also have clients in the French-speaking part. So no way that I show up and talk English to them. So it's already important to have salespeople who actually speak the language of the clients, because again, the French-speaking part will have another way to interact with us rather than in the German-speaking, which is more direct, I would say. So that's the cultural background has quite a strong impact on how you sell it in the end. But it's also the interesting side, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? Isn't it true, though, sales is about adjusting our approach to whoever we're talking to, right? So, and you bring up a very good point, because there's a lot of cultural similarity between Canada and Switzerland, specifically on the multi-language or multicultural way of approaching selling. Canada has English and French, and Switzerland has, correct me if I'm wrong, five official languages or four? I think it's four.
So it's the biggest, German, followed by French, and then Italian. And then there is a minority language called Romansh, which is like spoken in the area in Graubünden. It's basically it's a language that has a lot of Italian, French, Catalan, another exotic thing in Switzerland, but it's...
And ladies and gentlemen, Laura speak all of them, right?
I understand Romansh because obviously it's very close also to Spanish. The other three I do, we're lucky to live where we live,
absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about Supertext as a company. When did it start? Where is it? Do you have offices outside of Switzerland? How many employees? What's your approach to the market? Those kinds of things.
Yeah, of course. So we started in 2005, as Rinaldo said. Supertext was founded originally as a copywriting agency. You know, the idea was to have like an online platform where you could upload an idea or a text and have it improved. So that was the main idea. Together, Rinaldo, his brother Fabian, and Remy, the IT guy who built up the system. And Switzerland being multilingual, obviously very fast, very quickly, clients ask for translations. To be honest, and that's what they would say, we had no clue about translation services. So looking at things like that, things went well because they said, okay, can't be that difficult. If we can write, we must be able to translate. By now, the part of translations is probably 2/3, and 1/3 comes from writing, proofreading. There's a lot of proofreading work as well to do. So it's clear why. I mean, you have content growing and you have to localize it for your markets. And we started in Switzerland. So the start was in Zurich, then the first office, the second office in Berlin in 2014. Similar, but at the same time different, because they have different clients. They used to have some clients from Switzerland. By now they have their local clients. But sometimes it's more global companies looking for an LSP. So the client base is slightly different to the client base in Switzerland. That is really a lot of Swiss bigger companies that have a quite high and regular language demand. We were, before merging with Tech Shuttle, around 100 employees. Now we are 120. I would say about probably 70 in Switzerland and the rest in Germany. And we work very, very closely together. So I'd say this came together in the last few years, having sales like in common. We have two project management teams on the different locations, language experts on both sides. We are, you know, we focus as a full service provider, obviously now with technology as well, with an important component of AI, building it itself, not just buying it as a software, as many LSPs do right now.
Okay. So, which leads me to the next topic I would like to touch on during our conversation. So, obviously, you're an active member of the industry as Supertext, and as you personally have been in the industry for a while. And we're going through as an industry, everybody agrees that we're going through a transformative time. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to say induced by AI or forced by AI. But majorly is AI. We have been through the industry life cycle for the past, how many years I've been in the industry. I've seen the industry go through what I call the emotional trauma associated with change brought on by either a new technology, a new process, a new idea. And, you know, over the years, we have not yet as an industry accepted that change part of life. And, you know, but there you go. It's a new thing now. AI is coming along and it's changing us. It's changing all of us, not just in the language side of things, in everything we do, in everything we touch, in every consumer goods now is AI everywhere. Your iPhone or your phone in general has AI built into it. I don't know. It feels like it's kind of, you know, it's filling our lives. Mm-hmm. But the translation industry in general seems to be, to me, there's two parts of the translation industry, actually. As you know, there's like 19,000 companies in our industry, give or take. They can go into two categories. One is trying to delay the inevitable. Basically, I'm trying to make sure that, you know, I call it revenue retention category, meaning I retain my revenues and I try to, you know, block everything else around it. And the other one, they're playing the avant-garde kind of futuristic way of approaching the market, meaning that I'm going to deploy, as you guys are doing, I'm going to deploy AI solutions. I'm going to offer it as an option to our customers. I'm going to marry it with my, traditional way of producing the language side of things. So let's talk AI for a second. So first, before we get into AI, what is your view now on the industry in general?
You know, I'm very optimistic, and I'm, the last few years later conferences where sometimes it's already like the industry is going to die and it's the end of translation. No, I don't see it like that. But one thing is for sure, it is some way coming to a certain end, the translation as such. So to me, well, there are two things. It's definitely still growing. So that's a positive thing. And I don't see technology just as a, you know, side thing. It's just in it now. So if you look at it like that, that you say you put like more the product in the middle, and then you have your services around and you make sure that clients don't have to think, oh, do I need this service or do I need technology? But that it's intuitive, you know, what they need, and you actually lead them to that. That's where the industry goes to. But to reach that, you have to make sure that you're able to get into the client's systems, right? That they let you have an integration to their CMS or to their complete ecosystem, because then you're part of the whole thing. As you said before, AI is everywhere. So I look at it, I see many chances in our industry. Definitely only if you jump on that train of AI, and I put it as AI because I don't see it only as AI translation. I also see it as, how can we help our customers make their processes more efficient? You cannot imagine how many, you know, manual steps some companies still waste to have their content move from A to B or to then have it translated. So if you manage to get there and that they include you in the whole process, not just, I mean, the translation, that's always at the end. So it's actually, I would even dare to say it was more annoying before, because you would have companies creating content, and sometimes we could help them in creating content as well. And then at the very end, the LSPs came in to translate it. Now you can actually jump in much, much earlier if you do it the right ways. I think if we're willing, or those companies who have started working with technology a couple of years ago, they have great chances to move on and to have new fields as well. Whereas if you don't do it, it's going to be very hard, because of course you can retain, absolutely, but you know, I mean, I don't have to explain where our prices are going to, and that's going to be a very tough way.
But I can see the silver lining in what you're just describing right now, and to our audience, you know, I agree with Laura on the conversation regarding the industry in general. In the past, was an afterthought industry, meaning that, mm-hmm, you know, at the end of each project or at the end of each piece of content that was written about to be published, the general feeling, the general theme would be is that we need to translate it. Oh, we forgot to put it in X number of languages, and let's rush into somebody in our translation suppliers and try to get them to put this content in that language. So the industry was an afterthought industry. And now with AI, mm-hmm, we have a chance of moving up to the source or the where the content starts, the start of the journey of the content. And mm-hmm, back in the days, I don't want to date myself here, but I want to say about 20 years ago, I created something called the document lifecycle. And at that time, it was just what it is. I mean, with the information available to me, I came up with that name. Today, probably the brand will be different. But the document lifecycle was the indication of that entire journey. Consider yourself, you know, just imagine a company A building a website. They hire a company, they spend a bunch of money designing the website, going through the intricacies of, you know, designing the graphics, putting the copywriting together. And I've seen companies spend like, you know, millions of dollars on mm-hmm, website. And then at the end of the day, we need to translate it, and they spend like $10,000 to translate it. So if I was to say the piece of the pie is, let's say, that particular project, it's $1 million to develop a website, and the translation industry getting $5,000 out of that, I think we're missing a whole bunch of money at the front end of this thing.
Yeah.
So this is where the money should be. This is where the money may be. Not at the transformation of the content, is at the origination of the content. You bring a very good point, Laura. I really appreciate that. So on that note, and I know you, Supertext, bought an AI-based company or an AI service company. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about that part of it, and how mm-hmm, are you offering to your customers AI now? Is it a service? Mm-hmm. Is it a product? Is it a consultation, or the above? Yeah.
Okay, so maybe a few words to how this happened. This company called Text Shuttle, an AI translation company, also founded in Zurich, was a spin-off of the University of Zurich. We had been working with Tech Shuttle already for about 4 years. So we were their clients, which means that we were using their technology as a software, finally, software as a service, for our own use, because obviously clients already bought in the last few years post-editing services. That's clear. So the big change now is that through this merge, we put actually the, you know, AI language company with that their expertise. So they train engines. We also have generative MT, but the thing is really to train engines for corporates together with an LSP. So we bring in, you know, the creative part, the language experts. So what basically changes is that we do not just sell the services related with AI, we sell the whole product, the solution. So what does that mean? We know it from DeepL, for example, you have companies using Text Shuttle, now Supertext, because that's the thing. So it was a decision to keep the name Supertext. We're still talking about Text Shuttle when referring to the product, but on the long term, we will just talk about Supertext. So we have companies using the solution as, you know, the web interface where you can just type in a text, comes in the required language on the other side, where you can upload documents, upload glossaries, for example. So let's say a company, I don't know, selling cars, for example, and they say, well, we have different brands, so we'd like to have the different, you know, glossaries related to the brands. But then we have companies as well who'd like to use the solution to have it integrated in their CAD tool, for example. So if you have a localization department, which is still the case in a few companies, they use it as a productivity tool to integrate it in their CAD tool and being faster, more efficient. But also having a secure environment, because it is a topic for most of the companies to say, where does our data go to if we just allow our employees to work with several tools and engines and we don't control it? We actually don't know where this goes to. And the thing is also, so let's say you have on the one hand, the classic services, so you order translations, transcreations, and you're just using another MT engine. For example, I'm just taking an example, DeepL. You're not training your system. So the idea is also for localization departments that they make use of the translations that in some cases they also order on our end as an LSP, and constantly train their engine. So that's what we're selling right now, both the product, depending on their needs, and our classic services. The product, if you ask yourself, so you're just targeting bigger companies? No. There's also the possibility, you know, for smaller companies to just have to buy like sort of licenses, a certain amount of licenses, and to have like committed seats. You pay a certain amount, fixed amount per month. And if you have more potential users, you just pay the additional users. So that's the idea. And obviously, I mean, you know, when you merge two companies, well, you have an idea what you want to sell, but you have to start somewhere and you have to try and see if it works. And if it doesn't work, you have to adjust a little bit. We just started. We're in a cross-sell phase, trying out with existing clients, but obviously also with potential new clients. And I have to say, I'm quite impressed, you know, by the interest of companies, because you have another topic to talk about. It's not just, hello, let's talk about translations, let's talk about language services. That's sort of boring. You know, all of a sudden you can talk to IT people, you can talk to people responsible for their digitalization or business transformation. Also, most of the bigger companies have like an AI department dedicated to AI in the broadest sense. So this is also changing. Typically, we would talk to corporate communication departments. And now we obviously also talk to them because you typically have to have them on board. But there is another component and that makes it more interesting. Yeah, I mean, on a long term, you know, as I said in the beginning, the idea is really to, if you now go to the website, well, you see the SuperText website and the Text Shuttle website. And in a couple of months, we'd like, you know, to have a rebranding and also to make sure that the client doesn't have to jump around. Oh, I need the AI solution, so I click there, or I need the service and I click there. The idea is really that the client gets everything from one hand in a customer-friendly, user-friendly way, that they actually trust the product and want to use it more in their company.
You know, what's interesting in this conversation, in my opinion, is the focus on the customer. And for the longest time, I had the impression of our industry. And now because everybody's under revenue crunch, I guess the people are changing their mind on this one, which is fine and long overdue, in my opinion. We always focused on the craft itself, on the profession itself, you know, having the best degrees in translation, having the best project managers. Of course, you need all that stuff.
Yeah, sure.
But the driver, the fuel for our industry, it's always been the customer.
No customer, no business.
You know, and the idea is that for a lot of companies, and I can say that with, you know, no judgment on anybody, that's their way they operate. So, I mean, that's fine. And here, I mean, even in my local market, I know a few companies that they, you know, their way or the highway, and input from the customer a lot of times is ignored in our industry, which to me, it's self-defeating because, you know, they are the reason. And now customers have options. Like, it doesn't matter what your solution is or how important we think our solutions are. And, you know, if somebody has it in their mind, you know, my solution is the best in the world and there's nobody compared to, it's a matter of time before somebody invents something different, something equivalent, I could say. So, yeah, that whole customer relationship in your sales, chief sales officer, like, I get it. I mean, you got, it's a balancing act. Everything we do is a balancing act. But how do you manage customer success and the excellence in delivering services to your customers?
Well, as I said, to start gathering information, you have to talk to your clients. When I talk, you know, also sometimes training key account managers, well, how do you do that? I said, you need to know, find out everything about them. Rule number one, keep talking to them. Show interest for their business. You know, the first thing is not I'm coming with my solution, my service, and the client was waiting for it. No, sorry, that's not how it works. So what we do is really understand what our clients need. Obviously, you want to have some standard because you cannot, you know, customize everything. That's not really scalable. But when you talk to your clients and you listen and find out what their challenges are, then it's much easier to then sell the right solution because they actually tell you, well, that's what we struggle with. That's where we want to go, you know, find out what their objectives are, what their strategy is, and then find a place to adapt there. That's the easiest way. And then obviously, I mean, if you look at who is placing orders, it's quite tough for sales because you have on the one hand, people, you know, placing normal orders, who need it on a daily basis, but they are not deciding. You just have to make sure that they are happy, because at the end of the day, they're the ones, well, giving feedback, saying if they're happy with a collaboration, but they're not really changing anything. And on the other hand, really talking to the decision makers, finding out, that's where I come in. You know, I talk a lot to the head of CorpCom. Sometimes smaller companies, you might even talk to the CEO. Try to involve a lot of people, you know, to have fans in the company, because they will tell you what they plan to do. And even if maybe you have some issues at some point, they will help you. So I think you have to show clients that you want to help them, that you want to help them reach their goals. And if you actually manage to do that with your service and with your solution, then there's no reason why they wouldn't take you and keep you for a while. In fact, I had a look at our client base a couple of days ago, and from our top 20 clients, most of the clients have been working with us for more than 10 years. And you know what the business is like. There are regular tenders. So it means that you have to, even with existing clients, you have to prove yourself constantly. Innovation. We talk to clients about innovation. We talk to them like, what's the next step? What's the next project? What are we going to do next? And so that's how you keep them, you know, on. It's not just, you cannot keep them just with translation services, language services. That's,
no,
it's just not enough.
And you know what? This is where we, you know, where the conversation descends into a price discussion, when all you're doing is commodity. When you're doing relationships, exactly. I think this is where it gets a little more evolved. The relationship gets a little bit more evolved on a personal level. There are so many things here to unpack. One of the things is, for the audience, what Laura is describing is the sales, a strategic sales selling by Miller Hyman. That's the sales process that includes the what they call the buying decision. They don't call them buying decision, they call them influencers in the strategic based selling methodology. So the influencers are anybody who can really derail or impact or influence positively or negatively your selling process. And gaining trust within all these influencers is very important too. Where we fall short is by developing a relationship with one individual, but meanwhile there are 10 other individuals in the same company that can influence you, but there you go, influence your selling process, but they're not on board with you. So therefore you have some issues there, you have some work to do. It's not easy. Like, some people from the outside thinking selling is easy. It's hard work, a lot of risk. Yes. And people who do selling, you know, hats off to everybody who are in sale, because they're taking a lot on in terms of personal risk. They're putting their personal reputation on the line, which brings me to my next question, which you and I in the past, we've debated that before. And I don't know if you remember those debates. The relationship between sales and operation, how do you view this? Like, you know, a salesperson can control so much on the customer side, but there are so many things that they're not controlled or that not within their control on the delivery side. So how do you balance that?
That's an endless love story, hate story. Maybe my view is, you know, since I know the operational side very well, I think I have quite a lot of understanding of what happens sometimes at the other end. But I also understand on the other side, sometimes the frustration on sales, because it's such a hard job, you know, to get there, to actually close a deal. And then you find out that on the other side, it's not going the way you want to, or you just have to. But I think there is a way to go. And what I try, and key, is to have them involved from the beginning, you know, for the onboarding, have the project managers involved at the beginning. Take a very easy example. You have a tender, and you know that a test translation will be included. So if you just tell them, oh, there will be a test translation, just make sure that it's fine. Okay, that's an instruction. But if you give them the whole context and tell them why it's so important and what it actually means, what the potential is, what it involves, for how long you've been working on that, I think it's part of showing also our job. I Yep. give some sales insights to other teams as well, so they understand what we're actually doing. And I find it's something that has helped our language operations and project management to have more understanding of that's why she sold that this way. But yeah, it's a constant, you know, we can't eliminate it completely, but I think key is communication between these departments, and it's possible to.
I tell you, like, my, you know, this is Robin's views on the world, I tell you. I feel like when we define operation in terms of operation in the industry, I think we are loosely defining operation. Mm-hmm. Operation in our industry, anybody who is customer facing in our industry, it doesn't matter who, mm-hmm. PM, coordinator, I don't care who they are. Mm-hmm. I think anybody who's customer facing, theoretically speaking, they should be part of the sales organization.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the accountability happens. I think from an operational perspective, the linguists, the copy editors, and, you know, the actual mm-hmm. people who are actually performing the work on a content, those are operation. But anybody who's in touch with the customer one way or another, mm-hmm. They should be under the sales umbrella, because mm-hmm. you need accountability all throughout mm-hmm. the process Definitely. Of selling, throughout every transaction, not just necessarily where the bid, you know, signature contract, mm-hmm. Terminates. And then operation takes over. I think that whole thing needs to blend.
Yeah.
Because as you mentioned earlier, trust is earned in our industry by every job we deliver. It is somebody, I coined, I guess, this terms a long time ago. And I said, you know, we are as good as the last job we delivered, the entire industry, not just one, not company.
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, your job as a chief sales officer, I'm assuming, becomes a little more difficult to go in front of a customer and explain, in some cases, and I hope it doesn't happen, why the problem happens, or how do I fix it? You know, you don't need to do that. You, as a salesperson, going back to how difficult a salesperson's job is to focus on the positive, not the negative.
Yeah. Well, in fact, our project managers are part of the sales organization. So I already made sure that they belong to my
You're one department. Of the few, Laura. I gotta commend you for this. I'm gonna give you a clap on that one.
So I said, no, let them stay with me.
Yeah. Well, lovely speaking with you, Laura. I wish I can. I have more time. After so many
Thank
years,
you.
Catching up with you requires more than 45 minutes. But I really appreciate
it's fine.
It. For our listeners, the time that they stayed with me, stayed with us on this podcast, on this recording. Thank you so much for joining me. Any last words before we stop the recording?
Well, just saying thank you, and that obviously I look forward to the next few years in our industry. And since it's a very, very small world, I know that we will be in touch for more exchange.
Absolutely. So for our listeners, thank you for dialing in. Thank you for watching us on YouTube. I want to thank you for engaging with our content, for liking, for sharing the content, for commenting on the content. I welcome your ideas, by the way. If anybody has any idea for a podcast that they'd like to see from this channel, we're happy to accommodate your request. And also, I want to thank Laura again for participating in today's recording. Appreciate your time, Laura, with us. And this is Robin Ayoub and Laura Fernandez signing off. Thank you. Until next time.